It's very nice and very ironic to be here during this ARCO week, as you all know, and I think that has probably been stated and repeated already in the past 2 days. We're experiencing strange times with culture in the Netherlands. I don't think this is the moment to really go into that, but I just came out last night of a debate with our State Secretary of Culture, so that's still in the back of my mind. But the Galleries program has nothing to do with that, because it will be the only initiative of the Appel that is realized without any state funding, and that is completely autonomous in a financial sense. So in that sense, it fits very well within the context of the fair. And Natalie will elaborate on what, before we go to our guests and before we present a hypothetical case study, we'll try to guide you a little bit through what the Galleries program is and what it will become. I'll tell you about its genesis, like where does it come from and why did we initiate it, and Natalie will give you an insight into what its structure will be and what its appeal will be. About, I think, 3 years ago, I had extended conversations with Galleries Jan Mott about the fact that he repeated a number of conversations that he felt that as a gallerist, or that potential gallerists had very limited means to achieve their goal. He said, like, there's a certain envy towards you curators because you have all these possibilities of becoming a curator. You can either train with an institution, you can become the assistant of a canonical figure like Jan Hoet or Kasper König or Hans-Ulrich Obrist and work your way up. You can follow a curatorial program at an institution like the Appel, or follow an MA in curatorial studies at Goldsmiths College. There's these plenty of opportunities to achieve your goal. Well, as a gallerist, we only have two potential roads to becoming a successful gallerist. One is you train and you work for, as an assistant or an intern for an already established gallery, and you gain their experience from them. Or you set up your own shop, you make a couple of mistakes, and then you either succeed or fail. And in the first scenario, it most probably means that you will, in the end, commit some kind of father or mother murder, that you will actually put a knife in the back of your former boss, steal some of the artists, some borrow the backer and the database, and then set up your own shop. He says that's very limited possibilities. And the second thing that Jan Mott talked about extensively was the absence of, let's say, I think in the curatorial world, we may be currently suffering from a surplus of discourse. You know, like, we meta-curate everything, we discuss and theorize every possible component of curating. And Jan said that he felt that there was a certain lack of that in the gallery world, that of course galleries discussed amongst each other, and I'm sure that my colleagues who are much more experienced in that on the right-hand side might give you examples of that. You see, but I feel that we lack a kind of forum where those discussions could become formalized or more abstract, where we could discuss, like, what does it mean to curate in a commercial gallery? What does it mean to find a balance between sales and representation of an artist? So these issues were, let's say, if I summarize it, were the topic of discussion during a lot of informal conversations. And these informal conversations about a potential need in the profit sector eventually led to the Galleries program, where the Fair Gallery and the Appel decided to join forces. The Appel has an extensive experience in curatorial educations. Since 1994, Saskia Bosse, then director of the Appel, started up one of the first curatorial programs in the Western Hemisphere. And the Fair Gallery has an immense amount of experience in the commercial world, and we decided to combine that into a new type of program that could potentially be a sort of paramilitary training for potential gallerists. The training is a difficult word, because I don't think that we don't pretend that we'll turn people into gallerists. With a curatorial program, we don't pretend that you come in as a virgin and you come out as a curator. We're not a factory for making curators, but we're a kind of institution that tries through very, very precise experiences, through very dense experiences, to professionalize people, to sharpen their expertise, to sharpen their thinking, to make them more equipped as curators. And we want to do a similar thing with the gallerist program. Not to produce gallerists, but maybe to give potential gallerists more tools, more instruments to enter the battlefield of the market in a more prepared way, both in a practical sense, but also in an intellectual and discursive sense. I'm trying to downplay it because we don't want to sound pretentious, but at the same time, I think we're also very excited about this new possibility, a new sort of field of thinking, a new field of operating. And of course, ABEL will not do that alone. We don't have the expertise to prepare people for the profit field. We work in the public sector, in the non-profit field. That's where our experience and professional background lies. But we have an extensive range of colleagues within the commercial field that we can work with who are very enthusiastic about this idea. Because this is a bit of an informal setting, so I can also talk anecdote, is that when we, Natalie, Jan and I developed the first seeds for the program, we had some fears. And one of the fears was that fellow gallerists would think that this idea was preposterous and absolutely ridiculous and unnecessary. That was a fear that particularly Natalie and I had. Jan was not so afraid of that. And another fear we had is that it would be seen as an attempt of the ABEL to enter the commercial market and to find other means of private income in times of recession and a retreating government. Fortunately, up till now, none of these fears have become reality. Most of the gallerists we talk to, from Tanya Leighton in Berlin to Larry Gagosian in New York, were extremely enthusiastic about this idea and thought it was an interesting thought experiment. And the second point is that the most critique we got was from our fellow non-profit institutions who looked at the endeavor with a kind of suspicion of like, but what exactly do you want? What is your, do you want to become a part of the art market? Do you want to enter the commercial field as an institution? But our idea is much more about creating completely new and other alliances between the profit and the non-profit field. Very often there's this false pretense that the art market and the public sector are two completely different atmospheres, as if it's Mars and Venus, as if we have nothing to do with each other. We have completely different objectives, completely different goals, completely different methodologies. And actually, if you're in the non-profit field, it's a little bit suspicious to make too many associations with the commercial art field. I think that's false pretense, because we all know that collaborations go across those two atmospheres of influence, and that there's a lot of interdependency. The market cannot exist without the institutional field, but the institutional field can also not exist without the market. So we want to test those new kind of open relationships and find new ways of having a dialogue and learning from each other. So on the one hand, we want to, between brackets, train people, but we also want to learn from it as institutions of how the, I mean, in the future, there's going to be many more hybrid models. There's going to be many more other types of institution building. And we hope with the gallerist program to somehow take a test or take a leap forward, have that leap of faith to see what other models could be possible. But it's already way too long for an introduction, so I'll give the mic to Natalie, who guide you through our basic setup for the gallerist program, and also tell you a little bit more about when it would start, when the selection process would start, what criteria would apply, and how a potential curriculum would look like.
I'll try to keep it as brief as possible so we can start with our discussion with Helga and Janine and Rebecca. But what we're basically looking into for the gallerist program will be approximate 8-month course, which will be set up according to a nomadic structure. Instead of, as we have our curatorial program very much based in Amsterdam, they reside within our offices, in which they have their own independent offices, we will organize the gallerist program traveling through different locations in conjunction with events happening throughout the globe. We want to give the gallerist program a specific international outlook, also paying attention to the emerging markets, the so-called BRIC countries, And for instance, I will roughly go through what we advise as a curriculum for the first year would be a starting week gathering in conjunction with Fries, traveling on in October to visit the Rijksacademie Open Studios, being in Amsterdam for a week, and from then on in December at Art Miami Basel, and so on and so forth, in relationship to gallery weekends, art fairs, etc. The program will not be full-time in itself, we will be full-time in touch, but it will allow for people to follow the program and be at their own gallery, because what we have noticed is that we have interest so much of people who have never worked in a gallery before or are working somewhere as an assistant, but also people who have very young 2-3 year old gallery practices who would be interested in joining, so we want to open it up for that. The curriculum would include very much a lot of encounters with professionals in the field. We want to create small moments of concentration in which people can open up and share their own experiences. We believe a lot in this dialogue as a self-educational tool. It's very much the philosophy we also follow with the curatorial program, so that's kind of like the whole thoughts. And eventually the galleries program will finalize with a final project which will be generously hosted by Lieste Young Art Fair, who is one of our partners in this program. To briefly run through the timeline that we were looking at is that we intend to start the program in October. An announcement for this can be expected at the end of March. So it's going really fast and we're really excited. I think I could leave it with that. From the following slide, this is a lot of what Anne already mentioned, so I think we can skip that. I wanted to briefly mention the two-day workshop which we organized last November. Two witness reports of this can be found on our website as well if you're interested to learn more. I see one of our participants sitting to my left side, so for another witness report you can address her for informally after the talk. But we organized a two-day workshop to already work with people we are interested in collaborating with in the future. And also address some of the topics which we'll be bring forth. And to just name a small example, we had Andrea Phillips and Suhail Malik from Goldsmiths College, I need to say, who posed a very playful case study role-playing assignment, which I think also inspired our setup for this discussion right now. They asked the participants to group in groups of 5 to 6 people and then presented them with a rather ethical dilemma about how money works, actually, how the money is mapped, and then placed the participants either in the role of the artist, the curator, the small emerging gallery, or the big foundation, the big collector with a lot of money power back then. That brought a lot of very fruitful experiences, and especially we found that people who already ran a gallery really thrived from having this confrontation with different perspectives. A short quote from Ali Goura, one of the participants who runs Braverman Gallery in Tel Aviv. She was one of the participants who during the assignment kind of almost seemed to, out of pure frustration, fall off her chair, but in the end she was completely excited of having actually this confrontation. So this is also one of the reasons which excites both Anne and I in furthering this program. So now on with it, I guess. What we want to ask Helga, Janine and Rebecca is to respond to a specific case we devised. It might be totally naive and might not occur at all in the gallery world, but this is something we could envision happening, and then with the question, what would you do, what are your options, how would you go about and find collaborative ways. So the case study, to outline it, a young gallery has been working with an artist. We call the artist John Doe since its foundation. John Doe suddenly receives a surge of international attention following a presentation at Lista or Art Basel Statements with his gallery. This leads to a solo exhibition in a prestigious museum, for which John Doe gets the opportunity to make new work and occupy one full floor for him or herself. The museum's budget, however, is not sufficient to offer John Doe a honorarium for living expenses over the course of 6 months. John Doe insists on concentrating on this one exhibition and does not want to take on other commissions in the meanwhile. Also, the production budget does not quite suffice for his or her ambitious plans. The museum is putting in all the effort it can to raise extra funds, but there is still a large deficit to cover. In the meanwhile, another gallery, which we call Big Dog, Big Dog for this instance, he wants in and is really interested in representing John Doe. Big Dog is prepared to cover the extra production cost, but wants, in addition to the sales right to the new work, also to become an official representative of the artist, if not take over the position of the mother gallery. For an emerging gallery, what are your options? So.
It almost sounds like a competition, but we were very curious, as the curriculum of the Galleries program will consist of a more practical part and a more theoretical part. And the practical part will be based around exchange of knowledge by experts. How do I write a business plan? What about the tax system in Europe? How do I write an artist contract? But also around fictional situations of how would you actually respond? So we were very curious to know how people from different backgrounds and different types of experience would treat this kind of situation. So I don't know if Helga would maybe like to start. I think it's on.
Yes.
Well, I think there's no problem at all and all that. Because if they're an artist, a young artist who is interested in have galleries, now the world has changed so much that you nearly cannot work with one alone with one gallery. I have a lot of artists who have three galleries or four. Mm-hmm. So when we work together, we're making the things together. If it's a video, now today we're working a lot with videos, and then the production, if there are three galleries, we're working together, and then if there are five videos, so there's one for each and two for the artist. And then if you sell one, or you can have another one. But you take off the production, and then everybody has the same business. So it doesn't make, but it has to be in different countries. I mean, if I work together with the Miró Gallery from London, what's the name? Victoria Miró, on the project in New York, there's no problem at all. Mm-hmm. We're working together, and I do that with a lot of artists. But there are also artists who are very young and need first one gallery. And then, that was about 20 years ago, another gallery who was bigger, they came, she kicked it away because the other one wants to be in a bigger gallery. But I think that today we can join that together and working together, and we should do that from each time more because the world is much smaller and we have to work together.
And how would this go? Because a collaboration between your own gallery and Victoria Miró seems like galleries with a comparable status. But if a very, very young gallery would, so to speak, work, collaborate with Larry Gagosian.
Well, she's not so old gallery, and we're working together fantastically. She's in Barcelona with young artists, and if I like them, and if we can be together and can speak together, and we can join artists, it's no problem. But the competition there will be always, but it's better you take away the competition, you work together, is much better.
Rebecca, maybe?
May I ask an additional question, Helga, before we go to Rebecca? But you also said that this type of collaboration is new. It wasn't.
Yeah, it's new.
What made the shift happen? Do you think, why did it suddenly change?
Because before, the world was much different. and the Spanish artists only worked with Spanish galleries, the American with Americans, and now the world is so small, we're getting from one plane and another, that's no problem. We have internet, we're working together. So it has changed a lot in the last 10 years. And that's stupid to have one artist. I want to have him alone. This is absolutely gone. And we should work together. Don't you think so?
Rebecca, you want to respond to that?
I agree with the spirit of collaboration being more important than the spirit of competition, for sure. And I think that the key is in the last two sentences. I think what I would do as a younger gallery than Keller, obviously, and if I was confronted with this situation, it wouldn't be a problem at all. In the long run, I benefit, because my artist is going to have an exhibition, he'll probably have a catalogue, he'll end up, you know, having a show with a bigger gallery, and if the bigger gallery is in a different country, especially, it shouldn't affect me at all. I mean, you can negotiate with the bigger gallery how you're going to work, if you're going to consign the works, but even if there's no consignment, I still think you have to have a long-term view of these things, you know? And I have a bit of a problem with the whole mother gallery concept. I think it's...
What does it mean exactly for those in the audience who don't know?
Mother gallery, I think, means, well, that you start working with an artist from when he's very young, so you discover him, and then any other galleries that want to work with him in the future work on a consignment basis with you. So they would pay you a 10%, for example, for the sales, for example. I believe that it's, you know, it's good for the artist to have as many exhibitions as possible, and especially if it's good galleries that are being attracted to him. I just think that's positive for everybody in the long run. And what's key is that you keep a good relationship with your artist, because if that relationship is, you can never touch that, you know, so that's, it doesn't matter if one of my artists starts to work with Spruthmargers, he's not going to leave me, because what he's going to get from me is different than what Spruthmargers can give him, you know? And this is actually something that's happened to me, and I think it's great news for everybody.
Is it like a polyamorous relationship?
There's
this, if you read The Vogue and Elle and Marie Claire, they talk about polyamory, like, that this is a new concept for the future, that we don't have a monogamous relationship,
yeah.
Or we don't cheat on our partners, but we just have multiple...
Mm.
Well, not affairs, but multiple love relationships with people.
Yeah, and that's how you build a network as a gallery, and I think that's really important as well to understand if you're going to have a gallery, is that your network is super important, and that network includes other galleries around the world. And I've had my gallery for 8 years now, and I'm on the periphery because I'm in Barcelona, in Spain. And that network of international galleries that we exchange our artists with is, really need that. You can't just stay in your own city with your artists being, you know, I don't think it works like that.
Maybe I can ask a Janine question, take it from here, because you started your gallery 2 years ago, or a bit less?
No, yes, 1.5 years.
One and a half. Is it on?
No.
No, 1.5 years ago.
And this kind of finding collaborations with other galleries, is that something which you pursue at this moment, which have occurred, which is part
didn't
of your practice?
Well, I have one artist that I work with that has another gallery, and we are both on the same level, so it's interesting to collaborate. And I think when you talk about, especially, I mean, I'm very young gallery, and I just opened, and I think it's good when you work with all the galleries together, because you both have a different role. Also, I think in the art world, I think a young gallery has much more. For example, if you go to Lieste, you have a booth there. There are different people. Curators have a different glasses on when they go to Lieste, because they know to expect their younger artists, interesting artists. And at Art Basel, for example, of course, there are more the established artists. And I think a young artist has I think much more. Visibility with the younger gallery than probably he would have with a bigger gallery. So I think it's good to sort of enhance the context of both, both galleries in that sense. So, yeah. Where's the other gallery located?
It's in Zurich.
Yes, so that also feels, do you agree with the notion of like, as long as it's in another city or other country?
Yeah, well, I do think, especially in the Netherlands, it's quite hard to share an artist, I guess. I mean, it's too small, but no, but definitely, yeah. It's Zurich and I, we work together very well, and we're now talking about doing a gallery exchange. And yeah, I mean, I think it's also, I mean, she has different contexts, I have different contexts, and we can share them and collaborate instead of competing with each other, which is...
Instead of competing.
But Helga, if I may, like from a, let's say we're going to play a little bit of a naive role here. If you think about competition is essential in business, I mean, if you rule out competition, then you probably undermine your own business. So how should we understand that? Is this a new form of idealism? Or?
Look, before it was, if I want to have, I'm working also the other way around. I mean, if I want to make an exhibition with Doug Aitken. I have it here in the gallery now in Madrid. I don't want to have Doug Aitken in my gallery program, but I want to make this show. Then I'm speaking with 303. They are the gallery from Doug Aitken in Los Angeles and New York. And then we work together, and I have, you know, that's always going like that, 50% for the artist and 50% for the gallery. But if you work with another gallery, they have to travel with the artist. I have about 15 artists, I don't want anything more. So the trouble, I leave it to 303.
And what does that trouble mean?
Oh, what all, you know, you don't imagine what the artists can make and what they can do. So they have the problem. I only have the wonderful exhibition. I get the catalogs and everything. And 303 gets a 10%. I have a 40%. They have a 10%. I'm making the exhibition. And she pays the 50% to Takai. This is a possibility, you know, and that's very good. Before, the galleries were always competition. If there was Mary Boone in New York, or there was Leo Castelli, or you couldn't get half the artist book, it was from that gallery. That's absolutely stupid. Now we're working all together, and I think every gallery just, we getting together, we see that's the way to do it.
Would you describe the current forms of competition / collaboration as a kind of networked competition, as actually competing but in teams, and the teams may fluctuate and change? Or I mean,
no,
there's still...
The artist knows what he wants to do, and you can choose if you want to make this exhibition or not. When I make a work with an artist, I have to keep to him, and I stay to him like Santiago Sierra. He is very difficult to work with, but if you have this artist and you're working with him, then you like his work. If not, it's better not to work with him. And the other galleries just listen. I mean, we have trouble from time to time, and I have to phone to them. Well, look, it's Santiago and things like that. But we have to work together, the galleries. If not, it doesn't go anymore.
About the specific, I think I want to ask this to Rebecca, the specific relationship with the artist, what you just mentioned, that you have no fear of your artist also being taken over or working with Spruchmagers because you have something else to offer. How would you articulate that? What do you think?
If the artist makes that from me, he's getting out.
I get what it means.
Yeah.
I'm not you. yeah, I mean, you've just got to look at what's best for the artist, really. And as I said before, then we're all going to benefit. And I think the 10% is a very good way of letting your artist go and letting him have lots of exhibitions all over the world, but you're protecting him from this gallery in a way, because if it's the first time that he's having an exhibition with a new gallery, we don't know if he's going to get paid, we don't know how that's going to work. So so then he doesn't have any worries, and I'm the one that's calling the gallery to say, you know, you've got to pay him or whatever problems, because I'm like taking this mother role. I think that's where that comes from. You know, so the artist in a sense is, you know, kind of giving me the responsibility.
It's your responsibility.
Yeah. And then I make 10%, so it's also a way for us to make money from this other exhibition. So yeah, and when you say what am I giving the artist, I mean in the cases that I'm thinking of some of my artists who are working with more established galleries, is that the structures of more established galleries are huge. I mean, there's about 25 people working there, so the kind of attention that he gets from me is like, you know, I mean, I can be on the phone for like 2 hours and he's like the most important artist in my gallery, whereas there he's like the least important artist, you know, and he's and the context of my, like what you were saying about Liste and statements, the context of my gallery artist, you know, is very different from a more established gallery that's working with, you know, 80-year-old, 70-year-old artists. And I think that's very important for a young artist, the context, that gallery or that fair or that we're the same age, you know, we're going to grow together. And I think that's quite important from what they say to them, you know, that we're still going to be here in 20 years' time, together, growing together. I think that's quite important.
How is that for you, Janine? You have been working with a number of artists who have recently been residents at the Rijksacademie,
yes,
who are still there. So there is also very much, it's very young, still developing, mm-hmm, having those 2 years of fertile ground at the Rijksacademie, the sense of growing up together,
what does it mean?
I think what Rebecca just mentioned is that if you, as a younger gallerist, work with an artist who is your peer, you know, who is as early in his career as you are, you grow up together, which can be beneficial because it means that you understand each other, you're in the same wavelength, you're the same generation, but it could also be that you way cannot play that protective role because you're as inexperienced as the artist.
Yeah.
So I think Natalie's question was very much about, like, do you see that as an asset to work with artists, mm-hmm, of your own age, or do you also see problems?
I see both. I mean, in some sort of way it's hard because the artists become your friends, and on the other hand you are also business partners, so you have to divide that, of course. And to protect an artist when you're young yourself as well, and sometimes younger than the artist actually is, that sometimes is indeed very difficult. But I think it's really much a lot about good communication, about also informing an artist what a gallery actually is. Because when I started, I used to work for Juliette Jonge, and I just was used to that it was normal that this artist knew what the gallery was doing and what his ideas and his, yeah, what is a consignment? And when I started working, I just never realized that the artist, you know, didn't even know what actually a gallery is. What is a gallery doing for an artist? How does it work with consigning? How does it work with dividing the profit and this kind of thing? So that's things you learn through the process. And I think it's the most beautiful thing. On the other hand, is grow together and. You're a young gallery, you're introducing young artists, and you try to work. That's always what I tell my artists, we're just going to do it together. And I think that's what I think, what I'm aiming for at the moment. Yeah.
And Helga, do you ever, when you do decide to add a younger artist to your stable, because most of the artists you have been working with over long, how does that work? Are you scouting for a very particular talent or somebody with a great commercial potential? Or how do you make that decision to take another risk and another leap of faith with somebody whose talent has not been proven yet?
Sometimes, well, mostly you get in love with the work, because I'm collector also. Yeah, I always say that I see that, and I like it, and then I'm going to, what is it, where it's coming from, what? When you already know all that, then you see, where is the artist? I remember about 6 years ago, I saw in an exhibition, somebody said, there's a wonderful exhibition of a Spanish artist in Granada, but it will be finished this Saturday. And it was Thursday. Well, Saturday morning with the airplane, I went to Granada and I saw the exhibition. He was very young, he lived in London, in New York. And I said to the director, it's 2 o'clock, can you phone? I spoke with him, I get him up from the bedroom, and I said, Prudencio, I want to work with you. And he said, really? I said, yes. What I'm seeing here, I want to work with you. And that was it. Then he came to Spain, now he is getting married, and he brings the children, and now they're living here, and now I have it in my booth. I mean, it's going like that. And I love his work, and I like it very much, and that's it.
Can I pose maybe, it might be a rude question, if it is, say so. But I'm wondering about the context at the moment in which you can make such a daring and immediate decision. I think that also holds together perhaps with how much your gallery already was established, and that you could permit yourself to do that, and maybe for Janine, who's just opened her gallery for 1.5 years, you might be a bit more prudent in immediately or not immediately falling in love with work and starting to work with somebody. I think it's a question for both, and maybe Helga can respond first, and then Janine can take it.
I made a lot of mistakes, you can imagine. This way, it's very dangerous to do that. And I began in 1980 to work at the gallery Juana Mordó. She was a very established gallery, and I saw the best we had was in the gallery. When she died in 84, I was very happy to have 4 years to learn, because you cannot learn to be a gallery. That doesn't exist. This, I mean, you can learn about the artwork, I haven't been in, I haven't made Bellas Artes, what you say that in
Fine Arts.
Fine Arts, I didn't go to the university, so I had to learn it. Seeing. I didn't say anything in the 4 years and only wanted to learn. But when Juana died and I was the owner of the gallery by then, I saw the best things of the world with my artists from the gallery Juana Mordó. But once I went to a fair and they said to me, if you're coming back with that shoot, we threw you out. I didn't sleep all night long, you can imagine. The next morning, I said to the other one, to the gallerist, who said it to me. He was in the committee. And I said, really, I don't have anything in such a famous gallery. Don't you think I don't have anything? And he said, yes, you have wonderful artists, but the things you brought last year were absolutely horrible. So you have to clean the gallery. It's like everywhere. There's a lot of powder in your gallery. You have to get it away. And I started to clean the gallery. And now I'm still cleaning. And now it's from, that was in 84, and now we are in 2012. And I'm still cleaning from time to time. You have to do that all the way. And you made a lot of faults. It's like that. I mean, I think every business like that, it has nothing to do with art or things. You have to learn, you learn new artists, you learn new ways of exhibition, you learn new things I, as I'm collector, I learn and I now understand a lot of works from the 60s I never looked before. And now I have to pay it. You can imagine.
Janine, do you make those kind of very impulsive, intuitive, like decisions like Helga does, and do you feel free to do that?
To put it maybe a bit banal, but I think a relationship with an artist is like a love relationship. I mean, it's of course the artwork is the looks of the person, but then you still have to have a good character and also I think a good way of working together. And for me, when I choose an artist, of course I think I make my decisions intuitively, and then I see if then I make an exhibition with a person and we see if things are if we can work together well. And until now I don't have a list of artists on my website because I really wanted to wait before I make that decision, because I think that it's kind of an important decision when you really start representing persons, and I don't want to switch artist every year or anything. I really want to make sure that I want to work with someone. So I think
first test them. If we stay in the love metaphor, you first get engaged and you only get married when you're sure and then what makes that engagement into a marriage? Is that also the commercial potential of that artist?
No, not at all. It's really the way. For me, it's not the commercial potential, but it's really the way. If an artist is, it can also be the other way around. I mean, an artist can think like, "Well, Janine, it's not my kind of gallery. I don't want to work with her." And it is better to have a discussion after an exhibition when you have this, I think, extensive period of working together, installing, and speaking about the work with a lot of people. And I think if afterwards an artist thinks like, "Well, this is not my type of gallery," he can still say that out loud. And yeah, we just did a project together, and it's fine. And I think that it's also the other way. I mean, if you can't work together, if it's really impossible, that's important.
And Rebecca, you're literally in the middle.
I do agree with this metaphor. I think there's like a courting phase, and then it's like a marriage. I mean, from the beginning, you know, and it goes from both sides, from the gallery and from the artist. And in the same way, when it ends, it's kind of like a divorce, you know? I mean, I don't think there are any middle grounds. I mean, at least in my gallery, we don't just do a project with an artist or just take an artist to a fair to see how it works. I mean, it's always like, you know, it's intuition rather than reason most times, you know? But it's like, I like your work, I believe in it, and you go for it. I don't think...
But then you have a big belief also in your own potential to mediate and even sell that work.
Well, yeah, but you can make mistakes as well. I mean, we've made mistakes in 8 years. There's two or three artists that we're not working with anymore, and that's important. I mean, of course you make mistakes, but it's just like relationships, you know? You might think you like someone, and then it just doesn't work out.
But it also, I mean, I want to ask one final question, but first, as we have to round off, look if there's any questions from the audience. Nobody?
I'm a little bit afraid. Economically, if you don't have an economic background to a stable, it seems that there's always a risk. If it's always a risk, you never can be sure. Because I asked myself, can you make a gallery with nothing behind you?
Like every business. Like every business.
I think so. You need
something. You need a little bit, and you know, something who is behind you, or something who is just closing you, or something open, because they are opening a lot of galleries every year, and they're closing again. It is not easy.
But then you have these wonderful examples of, I know it's a different time, but like Larry Gagosian, who started off selling posters on the beach. You know, I think if you have the motivation and
but you always, as Helga said, you always need a start capital. Whether even if you want to open a candy shop, right? You need some.
It helps.
Maybe I can follow up on your question, because I think it's also, I think up till now, we get the impression that it's all a very romantic business. And we've been using the love metaphor all the time. But at the same time, it's also a ruthless kind of, it is a very competitive business where your survival also depends on sales. Have you been painting a rosy picture, or is that just...
I'd like to say something in the context of the profession of the gallerist. It's evolved in the 20th century. It's gone from Peggy Guggenheim. They were more patrons. They had a lot of money. They had a lot, you know, they were more like, patrons towards their artists. I think the profession has professionalized itself, you know, and now, pardon the pun, we are professionals. So you want to, it's become a business where, of course, in order for the business to survive, you have to make sales. So although I would say that you need to have something to start up with, you know, that's what the job is about finding a way to keep going. And I mean, when we started, we saw clearly after about 2 years that there wasn't much business at all in the city where our gallery is. And so then you have to think, okay, well, what am I going to do? So we started doing art fairs, and at one point we were doing about 8 art fairs a year, you know, and that's the way that we kept going. So you just kind of find ways, you know, because if not, we probably would have closed after 2 years, you know.
Believing going on.
Finding ways.
I think, yeah. Maybe Janine, Rebecca, and Helga. Before we extensively thank you for your contribution, would you have any kind of free-floating advice for people who will not follow this gallerist program because they think it's bollocks and they still would like to set up their own gallery? Something from your own experience, can be anecdotal. Something they shouldn't do, maybe. Or should do.
I think it's looking, a lot of people think, to have a gallery there. When I was at the gallery Juanamor at the beginning, they asked me, how is going your business? And I thought, business? If you, Juanamor Doshi always said to me, there's a 50% for each, for the artist and for the gallery. If you get 5 or 10% at the end, you are very, very happy. It's a very hard job to be a gallerist. It's not easy. There's a lot of people who open a gallery just because fun. No, just thinking it's very funny. It's for rich people. We open a gallery and that's very... It is not. It's a very hard job. If you will be successful, you have to learn a lot, and you lose a lot of money.
That's a positive note. Maybe Rebecca, you can...
No, I just want to say that that's the difference between gallerists and dealers.
Yeah.
Dealers are businesses that make sense.
Yeah.
Galleries don't really make sense. Those businesses.
We are galleries.
I would advise have a lot of patience.
Mm. Yeah.
Thank you. All three of you, and I also want to thank Maximiliana for giving us this opportunity to invite you and have this conversation.